Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Cherry is presented by the Writers and Illustrators of the Future and has been providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for their creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Cherry. Today we welcome master builder, green architect, and interior designer Scott Harris. He won the Malibu Choice Award in 2017. This is a recorded show, and please enjoy Scott.
Hi, Scott. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you? I'm so glad to be on.
I'm so glad to have you here. Since not many people have had a chat with you on our show, I have a rather large audience, but I want you to introduce yourself and tell a little bit about what you do.
Oh, okay, great. Well, my name is Scott Harris. You already said that, right?
Right.
I'm the COO and co-founder of Building Construction Group. And what we do is kind of create these beautiful mega homes for people that otherwise didn't have them. But, you know, I feel like what I do and what we do is so much beyond just home building. I feel like it's we do therapy for couples. We do...
really?
We do therapy for people who are unhealthy. We create, you know, homes that are healthy. We're kind of like, you know, the Make-A-Wish Foundation for homes. So whatever wish you have, people come to us, whether, you know, like Ed Begley came and said, hey, Scott, I want the greenest home ever built. Okay, that's your wish. We're going to do it. You know, Playboy Mansion came to us and said, we want this thing to be restored back to its brilliance. Okay, we're going to do that. You know, I want one of the biggest homes ever made. All right, hey, we can do that for you. So, we're the Make-A-Wish Foundation for homes. We don't do it, except we are for profit. I have to admit that. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's a different type of business.
Yeah, it turns out it actually costs a lot to make these things. So,
fulfill
the wishes. Yeah.
I had no idea. Did the Playboy Mansion fall in hard times that it needed to have a redo?
That was very punny, by the way, so I won't go there with that one. Falling on hard times.
Oh, I didn't mean that. Only a guy would think of that.
Exactly. Hey, come on. You know, it's the sexiest home in America. What do you want?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting history in that it was, you know, built for one of the original founders of the Beverly Hills area, and it was an estate that was built from somebody that was actually coming from England, and they kind of built their own castle here. They were coming out of the times when there's things like trains that were starting to transport things, and they opened up the Broadway store and built their castle. And some of like the coolest things, like here's some cool things that like nobody knows about the mansion, you know, they just think about the bunnies, but the original owners and creators of this place made it such a hospitable place that like favorite thing, right, Sherry? Favorite thing is you're going in for the driveway and they have a hand warming station. So the people that were bringing the milk and, you know, the deliverables to the property during that time, they stick their hand in this like nice little niche and it was heated up by these little coals. And so they could just kind of warm your hands for a minute.
That's really nice of them, especially back then.
Except, you know, they came from England. They didn't realize the temperatures in California don't really need hand warming.
But it's sweet.
it's really a cool thing. So, yeah, then in 1971, you know, Hugh Hefner takes it over and, you know, turns it into the sexiest home in America. And it just, it's amazing the way it was, but it was time for, restoration. It's like if you have a 1967 Stingray Corvette, you know, it was amazing, but at some point you got to strip it down and redo it, right?
Yeah.
And rebuild it. So it was great to be part of the renovation of that and restoration of it, but it was very quiet. We couldn't tell anybody about it at the time.
That's interesting. I've driven by it. I've never been near it inside, but I've driven by it. It's a beautiful building.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. And it's you know, some other interesting facts are is that it was built block by block, and it was actually built on the property. So they would make a form, and like, in other words, they made their own blocks out of concrete that they precast. And they were getting the soil and everything from there, basically built it from the land. I mean, it was kind of a sustainable structure at that time. And it's just, it's a testament to the creation. creators that made this thing. It's still in excellent condition. You know, it's really just more the restorative efforts had to do more with things such as, you know, the interior finishes, but the structure in amazing shape. Just probably one of the coolest homes we've ever gotten to work on. So we did the sexiest home in America. We did Fred Begley, the greenest home in America. I'm trying to do the White House. I'm going to see if I can do that one now. I want the trio, you know, like the most popular homes in the world thing, so I can kind of have the whole set. But I haven't heard back from Trump yet. I told him I built good walls, but I'm still waiting to hear back from him. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
I mean, no comment. But I just think you were saying that they built it. It kind of reminds me of San Simeon, because that's how Hearst did it. He brought all the structure and stuff, and then he built it brick by brick and everything from the original castle that he had shipped.
Yeah, very similar in that sense. I mean, it's interesting. You know, I had the opportunity to go to Europe end of last year, and you know, when you see these structures that have been standing for hundreds or, you know, hundreds of years, and you recognize that, you know, they had the ability back then and the intelligence to build them a certain way. And so, like, we kind of brought, some of the people were smart enough to bring the technology over here. I don't even call it a technology, it's just know-how. Somehow, you know, it's interesting, Sherry, like, you see the newer homes, like, we forgot it. Like, somebody went to sleep on the newer ones, like, oops, what? Forgot how to build them like that now. Because then you had globalization and everything. Just now is like, it's like disposable, right? You know,
and
before
that's we used to
value things. We used to, you know, like your grandparents, they would cherish that plate and that dish, and no, keep wiping it, sweetie. You know, it's like nowadays, like, oh, you know, you don't need this. You know, the other day we have a Vitamix blender, and my wife is just taking the thing that she thought was a plunger, and she thought it was a hammer, and she boom, boom, boom. I go, what are you doing? She goes, it doesn't matter. It's from Costco. You just get new ones when they break. You know. By the way, I sort of said, you smell that smell, the rubber? They get broken. So, but it's interesting. Like homes and everything, and cars now are just like they're disposable. We don't keep them anymore. They just kind of they go away. They just like you don't see old cars in the road. You know, the old homes, they just kind of go away. And so, we lost the understanding on how to value these homes. So one of the things that we try to do is build, you know, we call them forever homes, because it's something that we want to be able to last at least, you know, through a generation at a minimum. But the homes that we build, they're generally designed and created to last a number of generations. So that's what we like to do for our clients.
I'm really sad because I'm a Californian and I was raised in Los Angeles. And born in California, raised in California, so
nice.
I'm an actual native of this state. And I get really mad.
I get mad
when they destroyed Charlie Chaplin's original studio.
Yeah.
They destroyed the Brown Derby. They destroyed.
Yep.
I can't even say all the stuff that they did. I mean, it makes me, this is the stuff that built this town, and you guys are just knocking it down. What's next, Pick Fair? I mean, it just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of it is, and I'm with you, a lot of the projects that we do are kind of well known for doing these historical preservations. We're actually doing now one for the architect, one of William Meade's homes, his original home, the founder of Los Feliz. So we're going to be starting on that one shortly. But it's a lot easier to destroy than it is to repair. And you know, and that goes back to the whole idea of this disposable thinking that, you know, hey, if it doesn't work, just throw it out. Get a new one, right? Just it broke. Let's just buy a new one. Get a bulldozer in here. So it's sad, and a lot of the building methods and technology, you know, products that they used back then, so many ways, Sherry, are so much better than some of the products that we have now. You
mm-hmm.
know, you'll hear the alternate from people who are trying to sell it to you, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But just, you know, the quality of the lumber, so much better. You know, the quality of glass, the quality of the steel. I mean, it's so much better, and it's interesting. You know, you can take a home from 1920s in Los Angeles, and
they're gorgeous.
Yeah, they're gorgeous, and, you know, here you are, like, nearly 100 years later, and, you know, it looks like it needs a little lipstick and paint and needs to be fixed up. You know, and we took these homes from, like, vintage 1980s. You're like, they are ready to be bulldozed. You know, they're just not being built as well as they used to. So one of the things that we're trying to do is just bring back, you know, a respect to the industry to let people know that it's important to build a certain way. You got to respect your environment, and it's also, it has to do with health as well. You know, it's these homes are, nowadays, they're so many chemicals, and it's interesting. People are so worried about, you know, reading the labels, right, on your food and your drinks. And, oh, look at the Coke. It's got 37, look at the sugar content, 26 grams. Let's show throw that out. And then you take a deep breath. There's some formaldehyde in your house. I'm eating healthy and organic, right? You know, and that's something that people just stop thinking about. So that's one of the things we try to bring awareness to, not just to our clients, but we try to bring it to the nation, is the ways to build things better for people. So it's a slow process, but you got to start somewhere, right?
Yep. And it's very interesting because you were talking before about Europe, and one of the things I noticed when I went to Europe was that they had old and new next to each other. I mean, there was a great respect for the older homes and building. I don't mean just the famous ones. I just mean blocks of places that just have been fixed and made usable, and people live there. In fact, rich people move into places that poor people used to live in. It's just, they just fixed it up a little. They didn't change it, but they made it, they just cleaned it.
back then, like, they knew how to build. They knew how to create them, and it's like, it's funny. Yeah, everyone was on top of each other, and you're walking down, like, the streets of Venice, and you're like, wow, there's a door, and there's a door, and there's a door, and there's a door. You know, I mean, they're just like, you could just kind of reach your arm out to the next person's door. So it's interesting in that you recognize it really forces you in a position to be communal with everybody and to get to know your tribe. You know, nowadays people are so interested in just disconnecting. You know, they want these homes and they want their motorized gates and they want to be shielded off. And I understand that. I mean, you know, there's safety concerns and there's a lot of valid reasons for that, but you know, back in the day, like, hey, you better get along or else, right? I mean, come on. Red door, you better get along with blue door. You better. you don't have a choice.
So come on, red and blue. Be nice to each other.
Come on. You know, and just, so it's interesting. I completely fell in love with Italy when I was there, and just the whole thing of Europe. It was so, evolutionary in my thinking to just wake up and understand how people used to build and create back then, and so just loved it. Oh my God, what a gift to go there.
And also, when I was in England, when I went to Bath, one of the biggest shocks of my life was when I went to Bath. I'm thinking it's a hamlet. It's the way that it's described in Jane Austen and in Agatha Christie and all these books. That place is the size of L.A. I mean, it's huge. But it's beautiful. It's done so well, and they kept everything, and underneath is the Roman ruins, and it's just extraordinary.
it's absolutely breathtaking. But, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, too, like, you know, we're looking at this, you know, hundreds of years later and admiring and Googling, gogging, what's the word? I can't even
goggling?
Think of it. Goggling, yeah, I'm going to say Googling because I'm just all I can think of is Google anymore. I'm an internet guy. But, you know, going gaga over the whole thing. But there's probably, the reality is, like, what happened to all the structures that probably didn't work well? You know, we don't get to see those. They probably fell over and the water took them down, the flood. So, you know, what you're seeing is what worked. That's what you're really seeing. And so there's history there to be recognized and bring over. It's also interesting in the sense that, like, they understood how to do thermal massing in a house. You know, they didn't have air conditioning back then. They didn't have heaters, right? But they understood how to build a house with the way that you had thermal massing with the stone and the brick and the thicker walls that actually protected you from the sun and the heat and the elements. You know, it's like, you come to, you know, if you could, L.A., it's like everything's built with a just go to get yourself some 2x4s and some K-lath and some, you know, paperback drywall. There you go. There's the house. Look at that. You know, it's like the way we build houses now, or the way they're, not the way we build them, but a lot of times they're built like, it's like putting together a cardboard box, you know. The houses are lined on the outside with paper and they're lined on the inside with paper, and you kind of wonder, you put a biodegradable sandwich, you know, in between, and you wonder, God, why is that not working? Huh.
I was like,
weird.
I was thinking, right? You just described my first apartment when I moved out.
Yeah, it didn't work, and there's like mold, water's coming in, isn't that weird?
It was awful.
You know, but back in the day when you had these kind of thermal massings and you had these porous materials, they would breathe and they were more symbiotic with the environment. So, and, you know, back to the mansion, that's kind of what they did, and they brought over some of that, I don't even know if I want to call it technology, maybe just an understanding of how to build. So.
Well, it's also interesting. Now, this I talked to you before, and I explained, I don't know a lot about architecture and stuff other than my view of it, but I did study archaeology.
Nice.
And one of the things I find fascinating is that the people in antiquity knew how to do things that we still haven't figured out how to do, like build a pyramid.
Right. Well, I saw they did that at the Luxor in Las Vegas, but it didn't really work out so well.
No, it's not the same.
It's not the same. I wanted to refund.
But I actually really liked that. I loved the hotel. I thought it was cool, but it's not... It's not really Luxor. It's not Cairo.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. It's interesting. You know, there was, you know, I realized that people back then, you know, we didn't have TV. You didn't have radio. You didn't have newspapers. You had conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You had to sit around the fire or you sit in your hut or your, and you talk,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I recently we went to Pennsylvania. We had the Amish build some cabinets, and they probably, one of the most advanced things that just I've ever seen as far as technology and understanding, like they solved all the problems that I was always a head scratcher. And I said, where do you come up with this stuff? And they said, well, we don't watch TV, so what do you think we do at night? We all sit around and talk, like, and we figure things out. And so that's where we all disconnected in this society. We're all, you know, you're lucky if a family of four spends 3 minutes talking to each other and they're not on their phone, right? You know, checking their social media apps and, oh, I got a message. Hold on, I got to go. You know, it's, we're relying now on advertising and pop-up ads, and we just stopped kind of evolutionarily growing in so many ways. We've become, in so many ways, dependent on what we're told to do, and it's just not the same. But back in antiquities, you know, something you mentioned, if I can mention it, you said you're in love for Frank Lloyd Wright.
Mm-hmm. I adore Frank Lloyd Wright.
And so one of the things that, just to share with you, it's interesting, is, you know, he had an understanding of proportions, and there's certain proportions that the whole show on its own, but there's proportions that actually relate to the genetic formulas that we use to create bodies using to reproduce their cells. And so, and it's the same proportions of the body, and, you know, Leonardo da Vinci figured it out, Fibonacci figured these things out, Frank Lloyd Wright knew this as well. And so what he was doing, he was actually putting these proportions into things. And so, like, when he's designing a building or furniture, and you're like, God, that grid's so cool, but I don't know why I like it. It's cool. And he would actually do a grid, right, with dots, and then he would draw and connect the dots in more or less random places that he wanted. And then he would erase it. All the other dots in the grid was gone. And then you can't figure out, like, why is that cool? I don't get it. That's just so cool. And you stare at it. But there is something there's a reason that it's magical. And it's something that connects into, like, even your own, you know, sensibility of how you're back to your first cells, how they were multiplied. They kind of go 1, 3, 5, 8. And you start to put those kind of proportions, you know, a drawer is 3 inches, 5 inches, 8 inches, like, God, that's so cool. I love it. We lost that. You know, many people have lost that. So
that's really sad. But I love his... we were talking before, and I was saying that I really love his stuff because it's like art. It is just so... It's not just structural and sound and everything that needs to be a house or a piece of furniture or something, but it's just... It's beautiful.
What is your definition of art, Sherry?
something that's beautiful, that's striking, that it takes an artistic mind to. Leonardo da Vinci, when he was doing his helicopter, was art. I mean, it was beautiful.
And as I'm asking you that question, and you're like, think you're trying to think about what it is that makes it art, you know, and I think a definition I have of what art is it's the thing that you can't describe. It's the intangible aspects of something that just resonates with your soul, and it resonates so deeply that you can't really describe what it is, but it's just spectacular,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, you can disagree with me if you want, but
I agree.
To me, and it's something that it's formulaic and it's building, and it's something, it has to resonate, right? And that's really, when we're building the homes too, we kind of take some of these formulas and we put them in, and, you know, we smile when people walk in and go, oh my God, that is just like the nicest, you know, door I've ever seen, really. You know, we don't tell them why, right? We don't tell them what's been, you know, thousands of years of historical proportions are woven into your door. It's just kind of nice to see them smile. And the best thing, Jerry, is when somebody knocks it off. Hey, we tried to make that door somewhere else. Uh-huh. How'd it go? It doesn't look the same. Really? No, I mean, we did the same color. Wow, that's weird. You should have hired us, right? Yeah. You know, what happened? I did, when I first met my wife, I took her to a restaurant, AOC, that we did. And I did the whole thing with historical proportions that we didn't really tell them. And, I mean, no money was put in this place, but it was the number one restaurant in Los Angeles for 10 years straight, or like at least in the top 10 list. And then for our honeymoon, we go to Thailand, and there's almost an exact knockoff of the restaurant there. You know, colors, everything. And I'm like, just walking down Bangor, like, oh my God, there it is. It's kind of cool. But it didn't, there was nobody in there. The place is empty. And it didn't have it because they didn't understand the proportions. They're just trying to, like, knock off a picture. And so you can't underestimate the value and the healing aspects of having those kind of formulas woven into it. And people even weave it into their music. You know, it's just, it's a whole show just talking about it. But it's one of the things that I'm really into. So, you know, if you ask me what I do, I'm a builder, you know, by trade. But there's so many of the things that we're doing on so many other levels to weave in for our clients, and I think that's why people keep asking us for more. I hope it seems to be working.
I think that's really interesting. I mean, I've had a discussion with my brother. He says he's not creative, and I go, yes, you are, because he's a mailman by trade, but he's a cook. He's a chef. He makes these incredible meals and food and all kinds of stuff. I go, do you follow a recipe from mom or grandma or anything like that? And he goes, no, they taught me how to cook, but no. That's creativity.
Yeah, I mean, look, the definition of creating is like you're making something from nothing, right?
Yeah.
You created it, so a lot of us, like, underestimate our abilities to be creative. And something else, like, a lot of people say they're not mathematically inclined. You know, I'm so horrible at math. Don't show me those numbers, but... You know, we're mathematical geniuses without even understanding it. We just don't translate it in our mind. So, you know, for example, when you're looking at the human face, it takes you, I mean, sure, how long does it take you to look at somebody and go, oh God, or wow, my God, look at that, right? Like a split second, right?
Second, yeah.
You know, yeah, you're like, and what your brain is doing is you're actually calculating the distance between the eyes, the nose, you know, you're running thousands of computations in your head. You know, oh, that eye's an eighth inch too low. Okay, not so good. That nose a little high. No, not so good. That is the difference between beauty and not beauty, is your brain is actually connecting all of these points. And so all of us are creative geniuses. We're all mathematical geniuses. We just don't, like, you know, we've been trained to disconnect from that. And, you know, I'm not good at math. And no, I don't create. But, you know, part of this is I like to be able to encourage and inspire people. That was actually exciting. I actually teared up, but I was, I think it was last year, they put me on a list as one of the, Gladys Magazine put me on a list as one of the 100 most inspirational people of the decade.
Wow.
Yeah. Like it was, you know, they had Gordon Ramsay on there and, you know, Brad Pitt and Madonna. And I mean, it was like, Scott, like, wait, no, it can't be. No, how is that? So, you know, in addition to just, I wish, my goal is, and I'm hopefully fearless, is to kind of inspire a nation, you know, and beyond a nation to kind of wake up and recognize the beauty and brilliance that we all have within inside of us and kind of put the phone down. My wife tells me I'm guilty of it, by the way, totally guilty, but I try to balance it out. But we're just, each one of us has brilliance inside of it, and I'd like to kind of find where that brilliance is. Now, your brother, you know, he's got the brilliance in there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's funny because you were talking about math. I was always terrible at math, I mean, in school. And the only thing I did really well in was geometry.
Uh-huh.
I could do that really well, the shapes and stuff. I could figure that out. But and I could do basic math, you know, addition, division, that kind of stuff. But when it got to anything complex, I couldn't understand it. Okay, flash forward. I am in college, and I'm taking astronomy because I have a passion for astronomy as well as archaeology. And I figure out, I understand it. I understand parsecs. I understand the speed of light. I understand all this stuff, which is all mathematics.
Right.
And I'm telling my father about all the stuff I discovered. And he said, well, where was this all hiding when you were in school?
It's like you knew I had a little Galileo here. Oh,
and I was like, where was all that? And I said, well, they didn't teach astronomy in school.
Yeah, but I feel like it's, you know, they don't make it interesting. You know, it's, you know, people, I walk through this coffee shop and I see, you know, a whole shop full of very sad looking people with their meat notebooks and a pencil and just doing pages of, like, calculations, you know. Like, really, you know, unless you're going to be a mathematician, how does that value you? How does that really benefit you in life? You know, I'm not really, it's like, it's kind of sad.
It is.
And it's like, even for me, you know, if you show those things to me, I'm just not interested in it. But, you know, our bodies and brains are available to do things that are so much, so far superior. And it's just, I think it comes down to the teaching methodologies that they use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically some man some years back said, here's how you do it. Here, make, I mean, everything is created. It's just a translation. It's, here's a number. It's a formula. Do it this, you know. So not everybody, when you think about it, like math is, it's not creative. And it's probably, I would say, Sherry, you know, it's like, I have a feeling on some level that you probably saw the creative and creativity interest and how many options are available. When you start talking about the speed of light, you're like, well, hey, what's next to the speed of light? What goes faster than that? You know, what happened to the nebulas? And it's like, you probably start to open up your mind and think and get excited, right?
If I still do.
You still do.
I still do. I watch and read everything about astronomy and archaeology. I'm still passionate about both of them.
See, yeah, that's where it's just, it's finding, I think, everyone's brilliance to me. I mean, so, like, one of the times I always recognize that, like, in every single person, there's brilliance, and you just have to find it. You know, and every one of my team members that we have, I try to find their brilliance, and then we try to kind of weave it into these projects that we do. But if you listen to someone long enough, you'll find where they're brilliant. Everyone is unique and brilliant in some way. So it's fun to find it.
I was
watching
this documentary, and it was fascinating. Well, I'm a writer, so it might be a little more fascinating than me, but they were talking about how romance that we all go through normally was created in the 18th century by a middle-aged widower who had heart trouble and was very depressed. And his doctor told him that do some exercise and write out some and stuff. And so he created this story. And basically this story was, it was like the first fan thing before people were like, waiting for the next story to come out. They had all kinds of
fantasy ideas of what romance really is.
Yeah, but not only that, I mean, there was an industry attached to this book that this guy was just using to get himself out of his depression. People bought prints of the different scenes. They bought fans and perfume. I mean, it was like a fandom before there was fandom. I was just electrified by it because it was just out of, I'm like, oh my god, I'm trying to remember what the name of the book was.
So you're saying these romance novels, these Harlan Quinn novels, there's something where it's just all been scripted, and so all these years these poor men have been tortured by, you know, if you didn't bring me flowers and if you had a set, it's all pre-scripted.
Well, it was the name of the book was Pamela. I had to look it up really quick. The name of the book was Pamela. And now listen to this. This is fascinating. And yes, we all have learned from these novels. There was a neurologist who called being sensitive to being moody and sad and all that stuff sensibility. And sensibility became a trend. And Gainsborough did beautiful paintings based on sensibility. So it wasn't just the books. It was art. It was music. It stretched to everything. Jane Austen read all this stuff like crazy. She actually defaced, she was a teenager, she actually defaced the marriage book in her father's rectory, putting down who her romance, who she was going to marry, she was filling out the form. And one of the names was Fitzwilliam.
Oh my God.
Fitzwilliam Darcy.
Wow.
I mean, and it's just, but the engagement ring, the hearts and flowers that you were talking about, all of that, they came from different romance. This is long before Harlequin. This was back, you know, the romance of the Regency period. I was like, this is really interesting. And men learned how to be, not treat women as, well, not all men, but the men who read, learned to treat women, not to treat women as property from the different books like Jane Austen or Charlotte Bronte or people like that. And it's just like, it actually had a positive, it wasn't just, just a twaddle that women read that some men still think it is, but it was actually something that had an effect on all of society. People got married for romantic love now because of the novels then.
Man, is that why we have so many divorces and so many people are let down, huh? Those novels.
Isn't it interesting? I mean, there's, it's like, yeah, that's the other side. I mean, you know, people, they don't have romantic love, or they do have romantic love and they screw up, or they have somebody who's a jerk.
I hate to say it, but I think the thing that we call in love is really this drive that we have to call procreate, you know, and I think, you know, but also more what you were talking about, how the love goes beyond for art and all these other things. And I think it's just this thing that when something hits you on a cellular level and it tingles your soul, but you don't understand why or know, it's like, you know, we call that love. It's because we just don't have another name for, like, how it feels when you just tingle inside and you hear things and you feel things. And, it's interesting in that, as you said, this is all kind of scripted. But, you know, it's also, I'm not a theologian, and I did go to church, but I won't go anymore. I don't offend anybody. But, you know, in the Bible, there were still, I can't remember what, there were still some very romantic, you know, verses in there about how to treat your wife. It was interesting that it, you know, predates all the way back to then.
I mean, the Songs of Solomon are beautiful.
That's what it is. There it is. Yeah, the Songs of Solomon. Yeah, he must. God, that must That guy must have a lot of women, just want to say.
Like, he did have a lot of women. It was like he had a lot of experience.
Like, I bet God was like, you go, buddy. You go. You got enough. All right. You know? But then there was that thing where you can't have more than one wife. It's like, Solomon, stop that. We're going to stone you. All right? You're done. That's enough.
Well, he did only have one wife. He just had a lot of mistresses.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
A typical king.
Yeah. You have one wife. It's okay, I have one wife. But, you know, I have a few of these and a few of those. And, yeah, all these flavors. And so, yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, but they didn't have concubines. That was a different religion.
Must have been interesting back then. But,
it's just interesting that how the interpretation... I mean, my grandparents loved each other, but they were matchmade. They didn't even meet until they were brought together.
What does love mean?
I guess care. Deeply care for someone. It's not just the sexual stuff. I think...
It's not? I don't think so.
I really don't, because... my grandparents, they loved each other, and they were... they cared for each other. They argued like anybody else, but they were a unit.
I feel like the word love is like one of the most powerful and also one of the most hurtful words, in that it changes society. I mean, and we don't really know what it means. And I always tell people, like, you know, I've had friends and people who said, I'm in love, you know, and are you still in love? No, I love you, but I'm not in love. Oh, you know, let's end the marriage at that point. You know, it's, I love you. And people, it's launched ships, it's caused wars, but we don't know what it means. And it's just interesting. We say that word love, you know, I love you, I'm in love. And like, and I feel like it, when you hear it at the right time, it just launches a nation. And you hear it the wrong time, I'm not in love. It's amazing how, you know, that just, that one word, those four letters are so powerful, yet nobody really knows what it means, because it's something different to every person.
I think it is something different to every person. But I also think that if it's a long marriage that's still going on, that really works. I think it's not just the chemical, and it's not just the romance, but there's a friendship. And I think the friendship is what makes it last.
Yes, it has to, yeah. Because after a while, you're like, Dad, you're really pretty like 16 years ago, but, you know, yeah, you better still be friends. And you're right, I think it is that there's these endorphins that go off for like the first, you know, 2 weeks or 12 weeks of meeting somebody, and my God, it's like addictive, right? You know, and you feel that, and people call that being in love. But if you're not really right for each other, then it doesn't work out. But you have to have the friendship. It's so important.
I think it has to be the core. I think the respect and the friendship has to be the core of a relationship, and the other stuff is really just really nice. But like you said, after a while, I mean, my parents said that they loved each other, but I know that what my dad said is, we love each other, but our friendship is the most important thing. And I believe that.
No, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And
they had a good example. They lived until they were married until my dad passed away. They were married 52 years.
Wow. My parents were married, I think, 51 years before my dad passed away. They said they loved each other, but God, did they yell a lot. Wow. That's a lot of yelling for love, I gotta say.
Well, I mean, but people aren't fitted together like puzzle pieces.
That's true.
I mean, there's always going to be arguing. You're not a normal couple. If you don't argue, then you will get a divorce.
I totally agree. I mean, I think, you know, what's important in a relationship, and I guess we're off track about checking about homes, but it's okay.
We'll get back, don't worry.
Screw the home. All right. We have love up here, all right? We're talking about the good stuff now.
Romance.
But, you know, if you don't express yourself in a relationship, yes, that's what happens, is that you just kind of keep everything insular and you're not expressing it. Like, you got to let those things out. You got to vent. You got to kind of share, and you got to sit there and cry together.
Mm-hmm.
You got to yell at each other. You know, you got to love each other, or else you're not connecting. You know, you almost have to go left, to go back, to go right again.
Yes. And I think that's how my parents and your parents made it is because they did that.
Yeah, I mean, like, every day they were the healthiest yellers they've ever seen. I mean, God, they loved each other with those screaming. I mean, it was great. And 51 years later, you know, my mom still said that my dad is gone, so.
Yeah, my mom passed away recently, and I was going through her her letters to my dad and my mom, and all the cards she had. She kept every bloody card she ever got.
Oh my God!
I know. So wow. I had to go through the cards to figure, okay, this is important. This one's just from her office, who she didn't care about. Okay, da da da. But the cards my father and mother, just birthday cards and anniversary cards, are so romantic. You and this is from beginning to end. And like, and the letters that they wrote each other, even just the letter when my dad went away for business, it was sweet and romantic. I mean, it, you know, he goes, it's really silly for me to write, as I'm only going to be gone 2 days, you'll get the letter after I come back, but.
Oh, that's beautiful. You're giving me like warm fuzzies all over.
I know.
Like, I gotta go send somebody a letter right now.
You gotta send one, yeah. But isn't that sweet? I mean, it's just. Oh, touched my heart when I'd say about 20% because most of that.
Yeah, I think that goes back to, you know, I feel like back then in those generations we valued things, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you valued everything. You valued, and to your point, you even valued the people that you're with. You know, nowadays it's like, you know, even relationships are disposable to people.
That bugs me.
Yeah.
That really does.
Yeah.
We only have a little time. Do you want to talk about the magazine you write for?
Yeah, I've been writing for a number of magazines, and one of the ones that I just have an affinity with is Gladys Magazine. And so it's a magazine that's designed to really respect women. And empower women, so I'm not sure why they have a man keep writing for them.
He's a token. He's a token male.
I mean, I'd like to be the only male on the pride there. No, they have other men writing. But, no, it's on the newsstands right now at Barnes & Noble and nationally in the women's interest section. So it's I think this episode is, or issue is, it's called Maison Couture, how to take your health from off the rack to onto the red carpet. So I've been doing a lot of articles that's kind of trying to inspire people to do things that we do for people who have uber amounts of money, and how to do it for your life every day, because not everybody just has a lot of money.
Yep.
So it's a good place to start, you know, for your listeners if they want to learn how to kind of take some of these things home that we do and we've learned through the generations of just what to do and what not to do, and kind of make a simple format how to do it in your living room, or how to do it in your backyard, or do it in your home. So it's been an honor to do that for them.
And where do they get that? You just can go to Barnes & Noble and pick it up?
Yeah, they're at Barnes & Noble nationally. They're in, I think, a lot of the newsstands, too. It's a cool thing. I like when I'm with my kids or wife, I walk away like, hey, look at that. There's Dad right there. Look at that. Look. You got the magazines on the rack. So they're pretty much everywhere. You can go to Gladys.com to get them too. That's a great group. And I do a lot of writing for other magazines, as far as like as being Builder and Developer Magazine and Parade Magazine, and a lot of them is kind of a national expert as how to teach a nation how to build a better home, but much more technical in it. You know, if you're interested in the technical, but. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, our website is buildingcgroup.com, and the company is Building Construction Group, or my email is scott@buildingcgroup.com. So we're not only trying to, you know, build a business and do what we can for our clients, but also trying to give back to a nation, you know, things that we learned that without charging people, because it's just kind of a way for me to be able to give back and for our company to give back to people.
Is there, are you on, like, you know, Instagram and Twitter and all that good junk that people can come and say hi to you? Do you have a handle on that?
I've got a handle on this. Yes, I do. Let's see if you're on. I do have a handle on this. So on Instagram, my handle, I guess as they call it, is Scott_Harris_building. And I'm on Facebook as well. And I just couldn't get into the Twitter thing. I don't know, that like limited character, and Trump ruined it. Just gotta say, like, the Trump Twitter thing, can't do it anymore. So,
I only do it to advertise shows.
Yeah, but
you can't really be friends with people on Twitter. There's just no way.
Yeah. And if you Google my name, Scott Harris Builder, there's a lot of, you know, it pulls up a lot of different information on things and articles and pieces that we've been working on. So if any of your listeners are interested in kind of getting a little further education in the overall construction business without having, you know, somebody who's paid to do it, it's like, as far as an advertiser, and getting real information, there's a lot of good places to go. You kind of just Google Scott Harris Builder Building Construction Group. Also, we like to build homes for people, but it's a lot of good stuff. I'd love to hear from people, too.
Okay, so if you want to say hi or ask Scott a question, you've got a lot of places to go. Thank you, Scott, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's great talk. I'd like to be able to talk from, you know, from construction to love. I mean, God, we just ran the gamut.
We did. We did.
That was fun and hot. Let's do it again.
We ran in all different kinds of directions.
We did. All right.
Thank you very much. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
All right.